You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The philosophical manifestation of the curse in Genesis 3, there's not a push for equality so much as an elevation of women and a degradation of man.
Dear young married couple, have you ever heard of or even been tempted to believe the lies of our culture that say the feminist mindset is the correct default, that you need to believe these so-called truths about women and our place in this society?
Right, and we're not talking about voting rights, which are a really good thing, or the women being able to hold a high position at a company. That's not what we're not talking about discrimination.
Exactly, we're not advocates of discrimination, but we are advocates of recognizing the beautiful value that both the man and the woman bring to the marriage and how that value is different. Mm-hmm. And it's not better or worse. It's not about power, but it's about, there's just the value that God gave us. And how cool that God brought a man and a woman together in a marriage. And so you have exponential value there when both the man and the woman can recognize what each other brings to the table and know what you bring to the table as a man or a woman. In this episode, we have the privilege of interviewing Annalise. She's from a popular Instagram account called Feminine, Not Feminist. And she's a brilliant mind, really kind of an apologist mind on this subject. And she is going to talk to us today about some of these distinctions.
So you're going to enjoy this. It's going to be awesome. But before we get into the interview, we want to have a little bit of a let you know about something that's really awesome that's going to happen soon.
Yes. So just in a couple of weeks, we are hosting our third virtual marriage retreat. We launched virtual marriage retreats in the middle of COVID when people couldn't attend marriage retreats in person and people wanted it to come back. So we had another virtual marriage retreat last year. Incredible couples from all over the world logging in and investing time in their marriage when they may not be able to go travel and be at a live event in person. But this will be live and it will be online, and it's February 10th and 11th.
Yes. If you have DM'd us before and wanted to attend one of our live events and you haven't been able to yet, this is your opportunity to show up and have a good time with us. Last time we had a whole bunch of couples from all over the world join, and it was such a great time.
So the link will be in the show notes. You can go register. We do have an early bird deadline coming up. So if you want to get that early bird rate, you'll want to go ahead and register now. So go check that out. And now on to the interview. Welcome, Annalise, to the podcast. We're so thankful that you've joined us today.
Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor.
Yeah, we love what you put out on Instagram and just the message that you share. And so we thought it would be really helpful for the folks that follow us and who are very interested in God's plan for marriage to know some distinctions that you're really good at distinctions, by the way. I love that.
That's a good word for it. That's what I'm trying to accomplish.
So let's kick this off. Your screen name, your handle on Instagram is Feminine, Not Feminist. So talk to us a little bit about what feminism actually means. There's a lot of confusion out there about that.
There is a lot of confusion, and rightly so, because you're going to get a different answer depending upon who you ask. Because the definition that I'm going to give it, which is it's the philosophical manifestation of the curse in Genesis 3, probably not the definition you're going to get from someone who identifies as a feminist.
I love that, though. The philosophical manifestation of the curse in Genesis 3.
That's good.
That's my definition. But yeah, you're going to get a different answer. Some people are going to tell you that feminism is purely the social, political equality of the sexes. And I think that that is a straw man, because if you see the outworkings of the fruits of feminism, what you see is there's not a push for equality so much as an elevation of women and a degradation of man. And not every person who identifies as a feminist would articulate that or even believes that, but mainstream feminism certainly has taken that direction. So what I define feminism as, you know, in Genesis 3, you see that after Adam and Eve eat the fruit and the sin enters the world, God says to Eve, your desire will be for your husband, but he will rule over you. And there's some different ideas about what that means.
Sure.
But I think in context, what makes the most sense is, because he's talking about curses, is that that leadership that Adam had prior to the fall, because she was made a helper prior to the fall, becomes this source of resentment and bitterness for the woman. And it's something that she fights against. And so I see feminism as being an outworking of that. Now, I understand that there's feminist policies or like social policies that have come out of feminism that have to do with, like, you know, certain laws protecting women, property, sure. and things like that. And I'm not referring to that in this podcast. I'm referring to, like, the ideological, the philosophical, the attitudes and the mindsets, and not, like, the social policies that one could argue did or did not come out of feminism.
Yeah.
It's good. Another good distinction.
Because a lot of, there'd be some people, especially the ones you would talk to at your local Whole Foods store, that would say something along the lines of, like, well, no, there's a lot of good things that came out of feminism. Like, why would you want to remove yourself from this wonderful movement and freedoms that it's given you?
Yeah, like the right to vote. Like, I hear that one come up a lot as first wave feminism, you know, that
One could talk about that. And I'm not a history scholar, so I'm not going to sit here and pretend to know the history of first, second, and third wave feminism. What I do know is what I see coming out of it.
That's right.
Right.
The fruit. And you know things by their fruits. Mm-hmm. So
that's exactly it.
That's really good. So how would you want to separate, like, you're feminine but not feminist? What do you want people to know about the feminine and say that that's not me in, like, what the culture is pushing on you?
Yeah. So it's funny. I was on a podcast once and they asked me to define biblical femininity. And I was like, well, that term is not ever in the Bible.
So true.
When I use that, I'm simply referring to, what does God expect of me as a woman? What has he gifted me with as a woman? What does he emboldened me with as a woman, and walking in that. That's what I mean by femininity, is walking in the fullness of my womanhood as God intended it and as he's revealed in his word. And that is very different than what culture is telling me I ought to be as a woman. And culture has adjectives for how a woman is to be. So you'll see strong and independent, or, you know, what's the word? I see things like, women should be feisty, or women should be kinds of words.
I'm
like,
strong.
God define us that way? They're like the Proverbs 31, it does say that she makes her arms strong.
Sure.
But I don't see, like, an independent woman. I see a woman that is interdependent with her husband and serving him. So we have to be aware of the adjectives that culture says that we should be as women, and align ourselves with God's adjectives for us and agree with him.
That's really good. So what are some of God's adjectives that he gives?
So I love
women?
This because I've been doing a study for something through Proverbs 31 and pulling out attributes. And if you're going to go anywhere, I think you should go to Proverbs 31, because she is wisdom personified. Everything that wisdom is in the beginning of Proverbs, you know, because wisdom cries aloud and she makes herself known. This is what that person looks like who is walking in that. So one thing that you see is that she is very hardworking. She is not lazy. So in the beginning of Proverbs, we see the sluggard. She's the opposite of that, right? So she's hardworking. Another thing you see is that she is focused on, like, everything she does is to benefit her husband and children and maidservants. It's for her family. It's for her household. And so she is home focused. Another thing that you see is that at the end, which is basically like the, this is the climax of the passage where it says that a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. And so everything she does flows out of the fear of the Lord. And we know in the beginning of Proverbs, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So she fears the Lord. She's wise. She's hardworking. She's about the business of the home. She makes her arm strong for her task. And so she doesn't shy away from hard work. But then you also see attributes of her, like she's in the marketplace selling these beautiful things that she makes. She is excellent in her work.
Yeah.
And there's another place in Proverbs, because Proverbs is constantly feeding into itself and they're interwoven. And there's one where it talks about, do you see a man who is skilled in his work? He will stand before kings. Well, that's what you see with the Proverbs 31 woman. She is selling her sashes to the merchants. And she's not afraid to, like, she's donned in linen and purple and scarlet. Like, she's not afraid to look nice and to beautify herself as a woman. So those are just some adjectives that come to mind. But you also see in Titus, when it talks about women being pure, submissive workers at home, talks about in First Peter, is it, or talks about not letting the adorning be external, but the quiet person of the heart with the quiet and gentle spirit. So there's so many places you could go to build a biblical theology of what God wants a woman to be.
Yeah. And contrast that with the adjectives that the culture is telling us women should be. What are those?
So the strong and independent, which when they say strong, I think it means a very different thing than when God says strong.
Because we can put strong on the biblical side of adjectives.
Yeah, we totally can.
Yeah.
On a very popular podcast, I just heard someone say, like, have you ever heard the phrase that I'm hearing a lot of feminists talk about, like, the future is woman?
Oh, yes. Yeah, the future is female is what they say.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you.
So when they say strong, they mean dominant and powerful.
Yeah.
And that's not what God is referring to, but because there's strength in submission, we know that from Sarah, Abraham's wife, and her example. So you can't just say what the word is, but what the word means biblically. Another adjective. So that, there's independent, strong, like bold, feisty, like these these words that kind of indicate like pride and this, like, searching for external status versus the humility that we see in Proverbs 31 woman.
Right.
There's a lot of showiness with what the world says a woman should be. Now, I'm not saying like a woman shouldn't adorn herself and, you know, be beautiful and all that kind of stuff. I'm not referring to that, but like this idea that that women are supposed to be proving themselves.
Right. It's almost like an inequality, right? Like that women should be dominant or better than or more than. And from first wave feminism, their whole argument was for equality, but now it's turned into the future is female. Like,
the future is female.
Let's just all female. Like, that
eradicate,
doesn't even
make
sense from a perspective of propelling the human species.
It does not. and that is more radical feminist. And I think your average college student who is by default a feminist because that's what you're supposed to be is probably just like, oh, yeah, I thought it was all about, you know, I don't know, women being
equal
accepted
rights.
Sure. Being viewed as human or whatever. So I don't think everyone has that perspective.
Right.
But that is, even in writings from like 60s and 70s, it was already going in that very Marxist direction.
Right.
How, from your perspective, because you've been dealing with this for a while, how has this created confusion or division within the home?
So there's many directions I think you could talk about this from. One is that one of the objectives of feminism, capital F, you know, the social movement, was to get women in the workforce and to get them out of the home. Now, if you want to know what I think about women working outside the home, I have an old podcast on my old podcast, Everyday Wife, and you'll realize that I'm much more nuanced about this. So if you want to know what I think, listen to that. But One of the objectives was that to get women outside the home, but the way that they were getting them outside the home was by painting this picture of it being the home being oppressive. And so it wasn't like, it was like, get out of the home because you're a slave in the home and it's not worthy. The home isn't a worthy place to spend your time and efforts. And so when you get women outside the home with that mindset that the home is not a worthy place, you can see very quickly how that takes the home from a safe haven to, like, you know, just a place where two people happen to live and live their separate lives. And, you know, they're married, but they're both out there pursuing their own dreams. And then once the women are out of the home, the children have to go somewhere. So where do the children go? They go to the public school. And then they're able to be taught in the ways of whoever is teaching them. And now, again, there's a lot to this conversation. And so I'm not saying that it's a sin to send your child to public school. I'm just stating historically what has happened. And so that's one way it impacts the home, is the home goes from being a source, a creative, loving haven to being an incidental place where people happen to live, and then they go out and do their own lives.
That's so true. Yeah, because it's supposed to be viewed from a Proverbs 31 perspective as a sanctuary. It's a blessing. It's where we do life. And she goes outside the home to sell her goods in the marketplace. So her work is blessed outside the home, but the home is not viewed as, you don't have that mindset of the home being an oppressive place.
If you devalue the home and what she is doing in the home, it really leaves her feeling insignificant. Right. I've seen a lot of women, if they're not making money, like the man is, then she feels less than, like, oh, I'm just taking care of the kids and he's making the money. And there's like a power differential there.
Yes.
And I've seen that happen, and it causes a lot of problems within the marriage. If he's
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
I was going to say, I like that you used the word power differential, because that is how modern relationships, we're supposed to view modern relationships through that lens of power and control versus love and respect and mutual. So if you do view it from a power control, it's like, who makes more money or who does more around the house? Let's bicker about these silly little things, like who does the dishes. And I can't tell you how many videos I've seen pop up on my Instagram of, like, women complaining, or I'll see it from men of, like, oh, look, I'm doing more around the house. And the whole point of this is, like, I don't know, to prove that there's equality. And my argument is, there is a much better way than this.
Talk about
that. Yeah, please do. Because that comes up all the time.
Yeah, we have a variety of couples, right, that are listening. Some are more in that traditional, the woman is home with the children, making the home a sanctuary. The man is outside the home working 8+ hours a day. Some people have kind of like a work from home, or both members are outside the home working. Talk about what this can look like for responsibilities to feel doable for a variety of homes.
Yeah. And I think the big thing is it's not really about how you divide labor or whatever, because the truth is there are no passages that say the woman should do this and the man should do this in terms of dishes or organizing or laundry or whatever. That is completely incidental. It's about how you, as a wife or as a husband, view the other person in all of it. Because my husband could be doing a lot, but if I have like a seed of bitterness in me that's like, oh, he should just be doing just a little bit more, that can seep in and poison the marriage very quickly. Yeah. So I don't think it's about how you divide the labor. I mean, you can sit and talk about that. You can look at how other couples do it. You can figure out whatever works for you. But it's about keeping guard of your own heart and how you're viewing that spouse. Like, are they... They can go from teammate and friend very quickly to like a competitor. And that's how feminism views the marriage relationship. You know, it's inherently unequal because the man is male privilege and all this kind of stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. It also assumes too that money is the great, like, Determining factor, exactly. Motivator, determining factor of who has the most power. I think it really goes back to that.
Which is funny because they'll get on like capitalism of being, you know, like this evil thing that, I don't know. It's just interesting because the same people that will like harp on the evils of capitalism or whatever. It's like, well, your framework is all about women need to have money to have power.
Yeah.
Or women need to have money to have influence. Mm. Or women need to have money to have safety.
Mm.
It's centered around that. So
that's good. Yeah. You had a post a little while back that I pulled up because I wanted to reference it today. So it said, who has it harder, men or women? I don't know, and I think it's a mostly irrelevant question. My husband bears a different mental load than me, but it is no lighter. I've seen both men and women adopt a victim mentality based on their sex. It's hard to be a man, but it's good to be a man. It's hard to be a woman, but it's good to be a woman. Talk about some of the differences between men and women. And you went on to say some other really good things in that post. So maybe you can expound on that. But talk about some of the differences that we often look at those differences as a competition instead of just complementary.
And we'll get right back to the interview. But what we want to do is make you aware that we have a resource around this whole subject of talking with your kids about sexuality. It's called Having the Talks.
And in Having the Talks, we address things like homosexuality, transgenderism, but even just the basics of sexuality, like anatomy and identity. We start the whole deck off with identity, and it's a resource for parents and children to play together. You could play it like a game, and it helps children as young as age 3 all the way up to teenhood. There's really 2 decks in one because we have questions for younger children, and on the other side of the card, it's a question, same question, but for older children.
Yes, and this deck is designed to really bring these subjects up organically so that you can really have this discussion with them and open a safe place for you to be an askable parent. So you could go to havingthetalks.com and get your deck. And it will actually reroute you to Amazon and you can get it tomorrow.
Next day shipping.
Yeah, if you ordered it today.
All right, link in the show notes. Back to the interview.
Yeah. Well, I can speak from just my husband and I, for instance. We are polar opposites, and I have met few couples that are as polar opposite as my husband and I. So I think that we have it almost like exaggerated.
Okay.
But we, and throughout our marriage, it's been a journey of figuring out how we can work it together so that these things that would otherwise be at odds are fruitful.
Yeah.
So the way that my husband thinks, for instance, he's very logical. He's very slow to make decisions that I would make instantly because I am impulsive and I'm just very easily excitable. And I'm like, sure, let's do this. And he will ruminate on something. He will research everything.
Adam's the same way. I totally get it.
And I will say that this has been something that I have resented at different points, but he's actually saved us from making some very stupid decisions.
Yeah,
because he gave time and inertia the opportunity to work and to prove whether something would be a good idea. Whereas I'm quick to spend money. I'm quick to say, let's, you know, go to, you know, move here or do this or do that. And so I could, if I was making myself the arbiter of what is good, and I was making myself the standard of how someone should be, I could look at him and I could use adjectives like he's not creative. He's not adventurous. He's not willing to take risk. He's not, I could frame it in such a way that makes it look like it's a flaw. However, if I flip the table, I could say he's thoughtful, intentional. He's not wanting to take on an unwise burden before it's time to. I could reframe all those adjectives to show that they're actually benefits to our family to help us make better decisions.
I like that. The
same could go for me if someone look at me as, oh, impulsive, rash. Yes, at times. You could also say, okay, willing to take risk, creative, adventurous, and make those positive things.
I love that.
And so I don't know how it is for the listeners in this marriage. Maybe it's a similar dynamic. Maybe it's flipped, whatever. But there are these fundamental differences between men and women, and you can frame them as being bad, evil things, or you can say, how is this actually a compliment to me, a balance to me, and a benefit to our marriage?
That's so good. So, Annalise, you talk a lot about women complaining about their roles, their responsibilities, their mental load. Talk about the difference between complaining and communicating desires or wishes well with your husband.
Oh, man. it's hard sometimes to find that balance. Yeah. But I think a complaint is, by definition, it's kind of impulsive. Like when we complain, it's not because we sat and thought about it for an hour and took it to the Lord and then went and complained. A complaint is that immediate reaction to something not being right.
Okay.
Whereas an appeal has time behind it. It has thought behind it. It has prayer behind it. And those differences will come out when you are going to your husband. If I go to him and say, I don't like where we live. And if I'm just, you know, in my feels about wanting a nicer house or whatever, and I go to him and I just let what immediately comes up just spew, it's not going to be pretty. But if I take it to the Lord and I think about it, I might find that I don't need to make this complaint, number one. I might find that I can just let it go. Mm-hmm. but if I've mulled it over and I think it's something worth discussing and I want to share my feelings, it's going to be much gentler after I've taken it to the Lord.
Yeah.
So what about for that person that's sitting there listening to you and be like, well, that, Annalise, is just being disingenuous. Like, you got to just let them know what you feel. Just tell them. Like,
I would say flip the tables. Like, I think that's another way we see feminism impacting, because women's feelings are put on this pedestal.
Yep.
Like, in order to be genuine, in order to communicate with your spouse, you kind of just have to say everything that pops in your mind. And I would say, one, flip the tables. If your husband has ever done that to you, does that work out? Like, and two, like, in what relationships do we ever do that?
True.
We reserve the right to be, I would say this, we withhold certain negative things that we want to say out of love and charity for others in every single relationship.
So good.
Yeah, professional relationships, familial relationships. We're thoughtful about the way
we
present a need.
Yeah. You mean, if you think about growing up and when you're still living with your parents, that there's a really good opportunity there to like practice communication skills before you get married. And I just think about all that I learned living with my parents of like, if I just let loose on them, that's disrespectful. It's not communication. Now, some people would say that that's how you should parent, but we won't get into that. letting loose and communication and loving communication are two very different things.
Yeah.
So I think that this idea that to be genuine, you have to be impulsive is wrong. You can be genuine while being thoughtful, guarded, and patient with your words. It's not the antithesis of genuine.
Boy, isn't that a lesson?
Yeah.
It took me a while to learn that, but why wouldn't we be careful with the most important relationship in our life? But I find so many spouses, and both genders, to be very like just impulsive. Let loose and impulsive with their words. And it's like, hold on. Give it thought. Give it time. Let it percolate.
Yeah.
Don't just say what comes to mind, but say what you think would best resonate or have the most soft yet impactful resonance in that person.
Mm. Think about James 2 and what he says about the tongue.
Yes.
And how that it's set on fire by hell. So if we have this member that's set on fire by hell, are we not going to be so careful with it? I mean, out of everything, how much more the tongue, that he says it's impossible to tame and that no human being has tamed the tongue.
Yes.
Whew. That's That's intense.
Yeah.
That is.
Yeah.
And that shows that we have a lifetime of sanctification to do with it.
That's right. So good. Okay, so we're hearing the impacts of feminism on marriage are include the confusion, the impulsivity, and like kind of this competition between spouses. Yeah. Any other damaging effects or themes that you see as far as the impact of feminism on marriage?
Well, I want to go back to the power dynamic thing.
Yeah.
Because I think that's all the other effects kind of flow from that main paradigm. And what people have to realize is that that power and control dynamic, it's a way that of viewing the world. And so people do this with different races. They view races as being in competition with one another. And people do this with male and female. And if you view everything in your life through a power and control dynamic, you will never relax and surrender into the joy of mutual unconditional love. Because you always have your guard up.
Right.
And they might be, living under the same roof and stuff, but deep down, they're an enemy because they're competing with you for control and power. And that is something that I think many women have unknowingly received into their marriages, is they're still competing with their husband. And so they're not relaxing into just being and enjoying and appreciating. Mm. And if anything, I think that's one of the worst effects, because that's robbing joy. That's robbing just mutual happiness.
Right.
Right.
It's profound.
Yeah, I think men could hear that same message of it's a mutual submission to each other, because leadership is servanthood. I mean, what is it? Ephesians 5 talks about the man loving his wife as Christ loved the church. We're supposed to go into that self-sacrificial love and serve. So her relaxing, or how do you say it?
Being.
Her being. Right. Mm-hmm. Her being isn't at risk if I'm doing my job well in service. So she knows that I'm not going to trample over her freedoms and her individuality and her autonomy. If she can have that confidence and I can take influence from her, she doesn't have to stand up and fight that fight that that culture is saying, you have to do this, or he's just going to wreck you and leave you, all this other stuff. Like, if I can send her those messages of safety of like, my moral compass is not self-governed, but it's from God. Then you can have that safety knowing that I'm going to be a servant always, and that you will have that individuality.
And the unfortunate thing is when the other person is waiting for the other person to grasp their part until they do theirs, and it goes back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. That's a cycle that I think that I have been in, so I'm not throwing stones, that many, many marriages.
But it's a cycle of conditional love.
Yes.
If we can both be mutually submitted, that's where unconditional love can flourish.
I think the test for that is, can you take influence from the other person? Like, how willingly can you take influence?
Yeah.
And if you can't take influence, then you probably need to go back and take inventory.
How do you receive correction? Or this is another thing I talk a lot about on my page, is that I remember growing up, my mom used to tell me a lot, Annalise, you are very defensive. Every time I come with you, I come to you and say, this is something you need to work on, you immediately give me a reason why it's not a problem. And I mean, I'm so thankful that she drilled that into me, that was one of my pitfalls, because I brought it into marriage. And then I was able to realize, wait a minute, I'm doing it again, where I can't even receive like, hey, could you maybe work on making meals better, whatever. I take it as an attack, as a threat, as a whatever. And it's hindering my growth, and it's hindering my husband's ability to communicate with me, because then every time he wants to even give a little suggestion, he has to deal with all sorts of unnecessary pushback. So how do we receive, I love that point, how do we receive correction from the other person?
Yeah.
And without seeing it as unloving or as a threat or whatever.
Yes. So you know what I'm hearing, Annalise, which is the opposite of what the feminist movement would say is your stance. I'm hearing that you want both members of the marriage to have a voice. You want this sense of servitude and love and being and not this competition and power struggle. It sounds a lot like equality to me. Mm-hmm. And I mean, in the sense of complementarian.
Well, and the reason that it doesn't sound like that to feminists, or that they see me as promoting female subjugation or something like that, is because as a wife, I speak to wives. Mm-hmm. And I let the men speak to men.
Gotcha.
And that's why they would say, well, it's unfair because, and I'm saying, well, hold on, let's start with our part.
Uh-huh.
And as Jesus says, when you've taken the plank out of your own eye, you will see clearly to take the speck out of someone else's.
Yep.
But a plank is very big. So let's work on removing that. And so that's why it sounds like, it sounds like subjugation because I use words like submission and, right. You know, that's very unpopular. But two, because. Yep.
It's true.
But also because I'm talking to wives. And yes. And if they are interested in what men are doing, there's many men out there talking to men about how to be better husbands.
Mm-hmm.
So they can do a little research and find that.
Yeah.
Yes. But I think they want me to say both. And I'm happy to acknowledge that I think both men and women should be laying down their life for the other person. That's not something I'm secretive about or whatever.
Yeah.
But I am discovering in my own heart, what are the boundaries that I've put up to doing that? And how can I break them down? And how can I share that with others?
Mm. That's really good. So good. I love it. So refreshing. Thank you so much. Do you have any other questions before we close?
I was just going to ask, any resources that you could point are the people listening to?
Okay. So people are always coming to me and they're like, what books did you read and this and that? And this is going to sound kind of weird, but there was a book. It was a very small little book by a professor at Phoenix Seminary. Dr. David Edgington is his name. And he wrote a book called The Abusive Wife. And it was written for men who are dealing with emotionally or physically abusive women, and like just giving them counsel from a biblical counselor, right?
Okay.
And a friend of mine just gave it to me. And so I was obviously not in that situation, but I was reading it from the mindset of like, I don't know, looking for patterns that I wanted to avoid. And it was an enlightening book for me. It was very eye-opening because he talks in it about bitterness and how bitterness is it's something that can destroy a marriage faster than almost anything else.
Yeah.
And I witnessed that firsthand in my own marriage. So it resonated with me a lot. And so anyway, that book I would recommend to anybody.
That's awesome.
Because he gives examples from his experience as a biblical counselor, real stories. He's not making this up. And that ability to like peer into marriages, obviously he doesn't give the name, but to see these common problems that stem from bitterness and from a power struggle and from that animosity, that attitude, mm-hmm. was really enlightening for me. So I would recommend that to any woman that feels like they really struggle with feelings of bitterness and control and things like that. Mm-hmm. I would recommend that.
That's good.
Okay. All right. Well, we will put that link in the show notes to that book. We also want to share links to your resources. So you're on Instagram as feminine, not feminist. What are the hyphens or underscores there?
Yeah. Yeah. Feminine underscore, not underscore feminist.
Okay. All right. And any other resources? Do you have a website or any other resource out there?
So I have a podcast.
Uh-huh.
So I have an old podcast. It's called Everyday Wife, and I think it's still up there. So you can access some of the resources there. And then I have a new podcast called The Feminine Not Feminist Podcast. And that is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Awesome.
I'm also on Twitter, but it's just kind of what feeds into my Instagram. So it's weird.
Okay. We will
link
those.
Find me there.
Nice.
Sounds good.
Excellent. All right. Well, we're going to close out this episode the way that we close out all of our episodes, and that's by asking you this question. Rewind back to the first couple years of your marriage. How long have you been married now?
Almost 5 years.
5 years. Okay. So rewind back to toward the beginning. What's some advice that you wish you would have received? And then fill in the blank, dear young married couple.
Okay. Do I say dear young married couple first?
Sure.
Okay. All right. Dear young married couple, I think I received the advice that I needed, but I didn't take it to heart because I thought I knew what I needed to know. Wow. And one of the things that we were told in biblical counseling or in premarital counseling before we got married was to pay attention to the verses that pertain to our role in marriage. And I still look back on that as some of the best marriage advice I'd ever received. But I wish that I had really listened to people that had been married 30, 40, 50 years. Instead of thinking, yeah, just let me get married and move on with this. Mm. So good. My marriage advice is listen to marriage advice.
Yeah, take it to heart. But I love that specific piece of examine the biblical model of marital roles. Like what are your roles and responsibilities?
Such wisdom.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really simple because it's just like you hear it over and over again, right? Mm-hmm. But then when you realize that, like, because God, what does God want of us? He wants us to be obedient. To sum it up in a nutshell, he wants obedience. How do we obey? We obey by fulfilling our roles. Mm-hmm. People want to be great servants of the kingdom and they want to do great things for the Lord and they get all confused about what that looks like. Well, it looks like fulfilling what he's asked you to do today, which is if you're a wife, be a wife, mother, be a mother, an employee, be a really good employee. I love how it's not that complicated. I just have to do it.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Annalise.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
All right, friends. We really hope that you got a ton out of today's conversation. And if you want help, if you want personal guidance with individual counseling or couples counseling, or even help with you as a couple reaching the goals you have, just reach out. Give us a call at 916-678-1797 or shoot us an email at hello@dearyoungmarriedcouple.com.
No matter where you are in the world or in your marriage, we can set up a counseling session with you and we can work toward progress. We also post marriage advice regularly on our Instagram, which is @dearyoungmarriedcouple, and we'd love for you to join us in conversation there. All right, see you next week.
Ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.